court will proceed to the fourth case, the United States versus Lockwood. Mr. Leonard?
Good morning. Mike Leonard on behalf of Mr. Laca. The issue presented in this appeal is a narrow one, whether the government met its burden of proof with respect to the loss amount and whether the district court committed clear error with respect to that calculation. And the real question for the court is what acts of Mr. Laca's co-conspirators were reasonably foreseeable to him? It's important to understand in that analysis the scope of the conspiracy, according to Mr. Alaka's testimony, and the history and evolution of this loss amount. In this case, the superseding indictment put the loss amount or total of the transactions at issue at just above 100,000, at 101. And it tagged Mr. Alaka with essentially $40,000 in discrete transactions that he was involved in either directly or with Mr. Tamita.
But doesn't the district court, I mean, this is not all that long a conspiracy. It's only about 6 or 7 months, right?
Correct. It's from April to about December, I believe, of 07.
Right. So, I'm not going to say these are ideal district court findings, but it looks to me as though the district court finds that Mr. Alaka was involved temporally with the full range of the conspiracy and that the acts of the other conspirators are, in fact, reasonably, or she puts it, reasonably anticipated by, but reasonably foreseeable to him. And that, once you get that far, you're at the $267,000 level.
Well, if you take those findings, those really are just her conclusions, but the basis for those conclusions was the evidentiary record. And that consists solely of the testimony of the government's agent, which is troublesome because if you take his testimony, which is the only evidence offered to get to the 267, you can't get to the 267.
But you can as long as you are willing to say that she's made a global finding that all of these losses were done pursuant to the conspiracy and were reasonably foreseeable because of the role that he played, because you can then go person by person, you come up with 267.
Well, I would disagree with you respectfully because one of the underpinnings of her findings is, first of all, that the counterfeiting check activity was reasonably foreseeable. Even if this court were to accept in a general sense that a guy like Mr. Alaka, who is a withdrawal guy, he agrees with one defendant, I'm going to go make some fake IDs, you give me the information, I'm going to go make some withdrawals. Now, if this court were to accept that means he should reasonably expect that the other co-conspirator is out there manufacturing, presumably with devices, counterfeit instruments, is negotiating those counterfeit instruments at accounts he's not aware of, and then is getting the proceeds. If the court accepts that that's all reasonable to this defendant, the problem still becomes a burden of proof issue because there were three transactions that relate to this counterfeiting check activity. And in each instance, the government chose to put on a scant amount of evidence and not to make their burden of proof with regard to those transactions. And I'd call your attention to the Crashin account, $65,000 out of the 267. And the only evidence offered by the agent was that she suffered a loss of $65,000. He fails to provide any date to even show it was within a conspiracy, which is important because one of the co-conspirators was only involved from August on. And the agent further testifies that somebody, not even identifying a member of this conspiracy, called in and transferred money via telephone to an additional account in Ms. Crashin's name at WaMu Bank, and then a counterfeit check in the amount of $65,000 was deposited into New York under someone named Nova DePolis, and then a counterfeit check was drawn on Crashin's account. But they didn't provide any evidence whatsoever that any of the co-conspirators, including Mr. Locke, were involved in those activities. They could have done it, presumably, if they had any evidence. They could have shown Mr. Locke, Mr. Tomita, Mr. Rikpo. They did this. They were involved. Here's the date. Here's what they did. They provided no evidence whatsoever to the district court. The other transactions, Your Honors, is the Brian Adams transaction, which is at page 16 of the sentencing hearing. Again, for reasons unknown, the government chose not to put on essentially any evidence as to the facts of that transaction. It was their witness they put on direct examination, and they stated essentially on a date unknown, again, no evidence it was within the bounds of this conspiracy, that some unidentified person, again, not pointing to any member of the conspiracy, including Mr. Laca or any other co-conspirator, had two counterfeit checks drawn off the account of the amount of $9,800.
But so, didn't Laca control those accounts?
No, he didn't. That's the key thing. On the three counterfeit checks, Your Honor, which totaled $98,000, those were not the accounts where Laca was going in and making these withdrawals. So it makes it even more significant. There's no link specifically to Laca, and more importantly, there's no general link to the conspiracy. And then finally, with regard to this Battaglia account, again, it was the government's witness. They called him, and all they could elicit from him was on a date unknown, not shown to be within the time frame of the conspiracy, an unknown person negotiated a counterfeit check in the amount of $24,200. Now, again, no linkage to Laca. It wasn't one of the accounts he went to as a withdrawal guy, and they didn't provide any evidence at all that a Rick Poe or Tamita or the other gentleman were involved in that transaction. So merely saying to the district court that these transactions occurred, it could have been anybody in the world according to this evidentiary record. Another important point for the court is that with regard to the online transfers, the district court drew the conclusion that Mr. Laca must have been involved in the online transfers, and therefore it's fair to essentially tag him with the 267. But again, Your Honor, the evidence doesn't support that. The government called their only witness, and the only evidence they had was of a sort of side conspiracy, that on some unknown occasion, again, not shown to be within the bounds of the conspiracy, Laca speaks to this guy Adams. And it's important because Adams doesn't come into the conspiracy until August. So they haven't shown that this conversation and the transaction even occurred within the time period of the conspiracy encompassed by Laca. They speak. Adam says, I'm going to put some money in your account, transfer money. No reference to online transfer, online activity. And Laca then withdraws about $3,000 and gives it to this gentleman. But that's not shown even to be within part of this conspiracy. And the only other evidence in the entire record for this court on this online transfer issue is that on some unknown date, again, not shown to be within a conspiracy, according to the agent, Laca may have been present in an apartment where one of the gentlemen who was in a conspiracy may have made an online transfer. That is not sufficient evidence to show, even by preponderance, that online transfer activity was known or foreseeable to Laca.
So Laca, Mr. Leonard, he admitted to creating using fake identification, right?
Yeah, he admitted to making fake IDs. One of the things they did not admit to, which is in the government's brief, is they quote the PSR, which essentially quotes them, and quotes their statements to the court that Laca created bank accounts and PIN numbers. But the agent never testified to that. That's counsel's argument after the agent testified. So
Did he admit that he created a fake identification under the name of Travis Tolley?
Yes, I believe he did.
And that was a loss that... an online transaction that resulted in a $32,000 loss.
That's correct.
Yeah. He got sentenced at low end of the guidelines, didn't he?
He did, but to him it's a significant difference because if we take away the $98,000 in counterfeit checks, where there's just no evidence, there's no evidence at all, he goes to a lower guideline range. To him, he'd be out of jail right now, Your Honor. It matters to him, and that's where he should have been sentenced, at that lower end.
The guideline range?
He would have been at the either anywhere from 6 to 12 to 18 to 24. The district court thought he should be at the low end of whatever guideline range he was at, so there's every reason to believe she would have sentenced him at most at 18 months, which would essentially put him out of prison right now.
Ms. Zimmer.
Thank you. May it please the court, I'd like to start by addressing defense counsel's arguments. First, contrary to his statements that there was not any evidence linking Mr. Laca to the counterfeit checks, there was, in fact, evidence linking Mr. Laca to the counterfeit checks. First, for each of the counterfeit checks, there were three in this case. The access, the information for those accounts was accessed by James or Rick Poe. There were only four people involved in this conspiracy. James or Rick Poe was one of them. He was an employee of Washington Mutual Bank. And his role in the conspiracy was to access customers' account information, write down their personal information and account information, and then sell it to two individuals, Tomita Inyang and Jelilee Adams, the other two individuals in this case. For each of those three accounts that were accessed by a counterfeit check, they were accessed by James Arikpo. He admitted to accessing them, and he admitted to selling that information to the people involved in this conspiracy.
But don't you need to prove that those acts of Arikpo were reasonably foreseeable, were within the scope of the conspiracy and reasonably foreseeable?
Yes, Your Honor. And for Brian Adams, that counterfeit check was accessed through an account in the names of James White, Jr. James White, Jr. was a alias name that Mr. Alaka used to he admitted to, and the agent testified to, the fact that Mr. Alaka obtained a false identification card in the name of James White, Jr. And Mr.
Wait a minute. I'm getting confused because he focused on three counterfeit checks.
Yes, Your Honor.
The Carol Krashen $65,000 check, one, the Brian Adams $9,800 check, and one, the Paul Battaglia $24,200 check. And I couldn't find in your brief what concrete evidence linked up those three particular checks to Mr. Alaka.
Yes, Your Honor. Well, the Brian Adams account, which was accessed by counterfeit check, was not addressed specifically in our brief because it wasn't a contested check amount. In the defendant's brief.
Everything, I thought.
Our reading of the defendant's brief was that he was only contesting four different accounts, which he laid out in the argument section, which were the Carol Krashen account, the Paul Battaglia account, the McMillan account, and the Williams account.
Well, that's two counterfeit checks and two online transfers.
That's correct.
So, but what about, I couldn't find anything whatsoever in your brief linking Mr. Alaka to the Carol Krashen check, and that's a big one, $65,000. That gets him within $2,000 of going down to a lower guideline range.
The link to Alaka with Carol Krashen's account is the fact that it was accessed during the conspiracy, which, as you stated, is a short conspiracy, and that it was accessed by James Arikpo, who admitted to accessing that information and selling it to the people involved in this conspiracy.
So did you prove that every action of Mr. Arikpo was reasonably foreseeable to Mr. Alaka?
Yes, Your Honor, I believe that we did in the case that he was linked to several, and if I can speak for a minute about the online transfers.
Well, no, let's just stay focused on something. I'm concerned to that every single thing that Mr. Arikpo did during that 6 or 7 month period was reasonably foreseeable to Mr. Alaka, in your view?
Well, Mr. Arikpo's only role in the conspiracy was to obtain the information and to sell the information to his co-conspirators. So that was certainly reasonably foreseeable to the defendant Alaka because he knew that that's how they were getting the information they were using to access the accounts.
So every single one of these things, I count 1, 2.
There are 12 total accounts?
Yeah, right. Well, right, 12 total accounts. Mr. Arikpo did not access any further accounts other than those 12?
Mr. Arikpo did access other accounts. He accessed, and it's contained in the PSR, approximately 70 different accounts. The information, he gave that information to the co-conspirators. They only were able to access 12 of the accounts. Part of that reason was because some of those customers already had online accounts set up, or their balances weren't sufficient for what the co-conspirators believed was worth their time to steal the money from. Mm-hmm. I'd just like to address this defense counsel's statement that Mr. Alaka was somehow just a withdrawal guy and that his role was limited to simply physically entering a bank, using a false identification card, and filling out a withdrawal slip. He certainly did this on multiple occasions, and in fact, when he did it with his co-conspirator, Mr. Tomita. And in his confession, he stated that he did many things at Mr. Tomita's direction, including obtaining false identification cards and using some of those false identification cards to set up bank accounts at other banks. As I stated, one of those bank accounts was in the name of James White, Jr.
Could I back up and just ask you, why did the government not ask the district court to make findings on these things. I mean, you can stand up here and do all of this for us, I suppose, but this is supposed to happen before the district court. The district court has this very off the cuff, you know, remind me about this conspiracy, and you know, what did I do about somebody else, and doesn't really clearly define the scope of the conspiracy, and then just says, yes, you were part of one conspiracy, the losses are reasonably attributable. But it's very vague. It doesn't, you're giving infinitely more detail than one can get from the district court.
Mm-hmm. Well, Your Honor, the comment by the district court of, can you remind me of some of this, had to do with the fact that the other defendants had a sentencing hearing several months prior. This defendant in this case was a fugitive and wasn't apprehended until several months after the defendant. So when the district court states, will you remind me, I think it's in reference to the time that has passed between the defendant's sentencing. As for your comment about the scope, that there wasn't a clear finding as to the scope of the conspiracy, this court recently decided Salem, in which the court found that the district court erred by not explicitly finding the scope of the conspiracy in that case. This case is different than Salem in that the district court did state on two different occasions in response to the defendant's argument that Mr. Alaka was simply a withdrawal guy or that there were multiple mini-conspiracies. The district court found that there was one conspiracy, that this defendant was involved for the entire duration and that he was connected, and sometimes the connection was stronger than others.
Does she ever define the one conspiracy? It's a conspiracy to brackets. What?
Your Honor, I believe on pages 42 and 36 to 37 in the record, the district court finds there's one conspiracy and this defendant was involved for the entire duration, and that's in response
to... But she never says one conspiracy to access online accounts, one conspiracy to pass counterfeit checks, one conspiracy to sell drugs, one conspiracy to... Does she ever say what the conspiracy is to do?
The court on pages 36 to 37 runs through the government's version of events and then states clearly that the three of them were part of one conspiracy and that the losses of the conspiracy were reasonably attributable to him, whether or not he was personally involved. I think that's the clearest statement there after she considers the arguments and restates the government's evidence.
Okay. Do earlier sentencing records, would they reflect a more pointed, comprehensive comment about the conspiracy?
Your Honor, the sentencing hearing for Jelali Adams and Tamita Inyang was over the course of two different days, and I believe it was for a total duration of 8 hours. So, yes, it was more detailed. I'd just like to state again that this was a conspiracy that lasted for less than 9 months. There were only four people involved. There were 12 accounts accessed. This was a very close-knit group. Alaka knew each of his co-conspirators. He worked with each one of them. He actually physically went with Tamita Inyang to make some of these withdrawals. One of his co-conspirators gave the statement that he was physically present when an online account was set up, and that was the account of Ava Lichtenberg. Some of the money from that online transfer was actually transferred into Mr. Alaka's personal account, which he then admitted to withdrawing, and following that withdrawal, his account was closed for fraud. He arranged to have a teller at a bank so he could make fraudulent withdrawals. He also admitted to that. He also admitted to the fact that he went to bank accounts and opened accounts in alias names and in the names of the Washington Mutual customers. And for these reasons, the district court did not clearly err in finding the defendant responsible for the entire loss amount of the conspiracy, and we would ask that you affirm his sentence.
Thank you, Ms. Zimmer. Mr. Leonard.
I think the court makes a good point in that a lot of the arguments and evidence being proffered by the government weren't proffered by the agent. And specifically at page 31 of the sentencing hearing, after the witness testifies, then the government, through its statements, makes evidentiary arguments about post-arrest statements made by Alaka, which were never introduced into the record. And they can't be relied upon by this court or the other court. And I think you made a good point, Your Honor, that the district court respectfully was not careful. She said specifically to the government that there were two or three transactions in the list that you just went through where I don't know you made the connection to the conspiracy, and goes on to state later that I'm sure you're going to have to argue this in detail later. So the district court didn't make appropriate findings for this court specifically with regard to the various transactions, and the notion that, as again argued by counsel but not in the evidence, that a Rick Poe and my client Mr. Alaka and Adams worked carefully together, again, there's no evidentiary support for it. They offered the agent to testify who said a Rick Poe simply provided IDs, and they offered no evidence of a connection between my client Mr. Alaka and Mr. Adams other than a conversation and transaction that might have taken place outside the bounds of the conspiracy. This confession by Tamita, it wasn't introduced in the record. This information about bank accounts that my client allegedly set up and created PID numbers for, it wasn't introduced by the government in the record. And again, I'll leave the court with pages 15, 16, and 18 of the sentencing hearing. And that is the sole evidentiary basis offered by the government for the three counterfeit checks. And it doesn't pass muster under any evidentiary standard. Thank you.
Mr. Locke recognized remand could expose him to a greater sentence?
As possible, if the court would allow him to, if the court would allow him to go beyond this evidentiary record that's already before the court.
I see. All right. Well, thank you, Mr. Leonard, and thank you, Ms. Zimmer. The case is taken under advisement. Mr. Leonard, again, the court would like to extend an extra thanks for accepting this appointment and ably representing Mr. Lockett.